episode 646 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Superman Sunday episode, and today we're going to be talking about Supergirl number 25. And I also want to mention this is a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode, so be sure and retweet the tweet that goes out to announce this episode, as well as direct message us the secret code word for a chance to win. Let's see, this giveaway is Superman, Our Worlds at War, Volume 1 from a few years ago. A big DC crossover event that affected a lot of books. So let's go ahead and dive right into Supergirl number 25. It is a extra-sized anniversary issue. We have three different stories. We have the main story, which continues to tell the tale of Supergirl out in space, hunting for answers about whether or not Rogalzar really had a hand in the destruction of Krypton. We also have a story starring Xander Cole, who is Supergirl's Kolun companion on this journey, who she just met a couple of issues ago in a bar of all places. And then the final issue is a holiday theme story from Dan Jurgens that, considering this issue came out in December, makes a lot of sense that DC would decide to put sort of a holiday tale here. So let's go ahead and dive into the first story. It's Supergirl in Picking Over the Bones. We've got Mark Andraco as the writer, Emanuela Lupacchino and Lan Medina handling the pencils, Ray McCarthy and Sean Parsons on inks, FCO Placencia on colors, and Tom Napolitano on letters. So we saw at the end of issue 24 that Xander Cole and Supergirl were heading to the former site of the planet of Krypton. And when they got there, Supergirl was immediately overcome by Kryptonian radiation, green kryptonite radiation. Apparently, she thought the shields on her Kryptonian ship would protect her. It's clear that they are not doing so. And Xander Cole's kind of panicking. He's saying, Kara, don't die on me. I'm a doctor, but not one of those kind. Apparently, he's got his multiple PhDs. I mean, Kolun's, Brainiac 5, they tend to be pretty smart. But as he himself says, he's not a medical doctor. I believe his doctorates are in archaeology. He's a bit of an explorer, maybe even you'd say an Indiana Jones type. So he's panicking. Kara, in her agony of this kryptonite radiation poisoning, says, spacesuits. He said, got it, spacesuits, where are they? So he grabs a spacesuit out of a locker on the ship. And Kara says that it'll help filter out the radiation. So they get it on her and she immediately starts feeling better. And Cole says, well, that was utterly terrifying. What happened? And Kara says, well, I underestimated the potency of all the kryptonite radiation. The suit should filter out most of it. And Cole says, most of it? I'll explain later. Just get this other suit onto Krypto. So that's what they do. And Krypto immediately starts to feel better as well. Opens his eyes, starts licking the inside of his helmet. And Cole says, thanks, Placid, I guess is what that's supposed to be. And Supergirl says, Placid? Well, it's one of my family's gods. I'm not religious usually, but you never know, right? So Kara is wondering why the shields on the ship didn't protect them. And Cole theorizes that whatever damage the alpha drives likely whacked out the shields too. Kara says, well, I'm going to find out soon enough. And Cole's like, wait a second. What do you mean you'll find out soon enough? Where are you going? And Kara says, well, the suits are only going to last so long before they burn out. I've got to see what I can find out before they do that. So she exits the ship. She's a bit overcome at first by the destruction that's there, seeing what she's lost. It's the first time she's been back there since everybody died. And she sees kind of a light or something glowing in the distance, and she heads toward it. Meanwhile, Xander Cole is warning her that the K-Rad levels are off the charts and the suit doesn't really have much more time. Kara says, okay, copy that. I'll be fine. Cole's not convinced. He's like, according to these readings, that's not the case. And Kara is wondering, okay, Mogo, why did you send me here? And as she's thinking that, she gets attacked. And we see a black and pinkish-purple villain here calling herself Splice. She says no one gets past the caretaker of Krypton. And Cole's like, what is that thing? Kara says, I have no idea. I think it's a her. Cole again warns her, well, the radiation levels are not good, so deal with her quickly. Kara said, well, it'd be a lot easier if I knew what I was dealing with. As Splice attacks again, she realizes that Splice has the ability to shapeshift, and she whacks Kara pretty hard. She kind of goes flying, and she says, I'm definitely feeling the kryptonite now, but I've got to stay focused. And then she starts seeing some visions of her father. Her father saying, I know it hurts, little one. Kara's flashing back to a time in her childhood when she found a dead bird. And her mother's there as well, saying, you know, life becomes death. It's the cycle. Death comes for everyone, as her parents start to morph into kryptonite-looking zombies. Kara realizes that they're just hallucinations. None of it is real. And she manages to get in a pretty good punch on Splice. And Kara's also realizing that these hallucinations are probably caused by the kryptonite. She's got to focus. She's got to filter out whatever her subconscious is throwing at her. Meanwhile, Cole is imploring her to get back into the ship. It's too dangerous out there. Splice is actually happy, it seems, to have been punched so hard because she realizes that this intruder, as she calls her, is very strong and it'll be fun to kill. It'll be a challenge. Kara then throws a giant piece of kryptonite, a giant chunk of the planet, toward her, and Splice starts blasting it with energy. Kara's surprised to see that she has energy blasts too. Xander Cole's warning her that this chunk of crystal's unstable, and once Splice fires at it with the energy, it's going to explode, which is exactly what happens. Kara thinks, okay, now while she's dazed, I'll press my attack. But before she can, she starts hallucinating again. This time she's seeing her father in his lab. It's not 100% clear if this is a hallucination or a memory, because her father asks, are you paying attention? She says she is. She's like, great, you should be honored. You're the first person I'm showing this breakthrough to. This device can restart a planet's core. It could save billions, no trillions of lives. And the piece of equipment that he's working with, we've seen before. We saw it in the pages of the Man of Steel miniseries from Brian Michael Bendis. It's that device that Rogelzar took to the center of the Earth that he was trying to use to destroy the Earth, and Superman was able to stop him. And Supergirl is wondering if this device had anything to do with the destruction of Krypton. And the memory or hallucination, whatever it is interrupted by Supergirl being blasted by an energy blast from Splice, but it does not have the intended effect, because what Supergirl realizes as she's hit by this blast is that this blast of energy is like a Temerian blast of energy, which means it's solar in nature, right? So this being Splice has shape-shifting powers like a Durlin, solar powers like a Temerian, unaffected by deep space exposure like a Dridian. She's some kind of Franken clone, but who would do that? Who would create such a creature? It doesn't really matter at this point who has, but whoever it is has now fully charged up Supergirl with this blast of pure solar energy. So Supergirl then has an idea. She calls on Cole to redirect all the suit's energy matrix into Supergirl herself. Cole's like, if you do that, you won't be shielded from the radiation at all. It's going to kill you. And Supergirl says, well, not immediately, just do it. And Splice goes in for a flying tackle just as Supergirl's about to let off her blast. But before she can, she starts hallucinating again. This time she's seeing the Durlin, spliced clone of Splice here start to morph into Rogelzar. And Rogelzar says, why is my brain bringing you here? And Zar says, what, you don't remember? It's the device you just saw that your father created, the one that I tried to destroy Earth with. And Supergirl starts wondering, what was it, my father's invention that killed Krypton? Father, why did you do it? The hallucination of Rogelzar says, he helped me immensely. And Supergirl says, I'll stop you. The hallucination of Rogelzar goes on to say, are you back for more? You ready to join the rest of your filthy people? I'll choke the life out of you slowly and watch you die in agony just like Krypton. And Kara says, "You mean like this?" and starts choking Rogelzar. As she snaps out of the hallucination, she realizes that she's actually choking Splice. Xander Cole confirms that he's redirected all the solar power from the suit into Kara. He says, "You only have one shot at this." And Kara says, "One shot's all I need." And thinks to herself, if this being has Temarian DNA, she can be overloaded. So no more Rogelzar, no more death. This ends now. And she fires off heat vision blasts from, not only from her eyes, but also from her mouth. And as Splice calls out in agony, all of a sudden there's some kind of a teleportation device that's signaled. And both Splice and Supergirl disappear. And immediately Crypto's like, Xander Cole says, "I have no idea either, pup, but assuming that she's still okay and Supergirl didn't get vaporized, there's a tracking device in the suit, and we can find her." Where she's actually gone is the Vega system, almost the end of the universe. And we learn that the being or the power behind the Splice creature is Harry Hokum. Many of you may know from the Omega Men title. And as both Splice and Supergirl rematerialize on the teleportation pad, he says, "My pet Splice, what did you bring me? A Kryptonian? That's just what I, Harry Hokum, a czar of the Citadel, need to complete my experiment." So next issue, we have Supergirl and the Omega Men. Hopefully, Supergirl will be able to find more answers. What might Harry Hokum, what might the Citadel know of Rogelzar? That very well may be why Mogo sent Kara out to Krypton in the first place. It's not totally clear. We're starting to get some answers. We're starting to see some threads tie together. You know, we saw in this story the device that Rogelzar had that he implanted in the Earth's core to try to destroy the Earth. It seems no matter what we do, what story, what iteration, what writer it is that's messing around with the origin of Superman or the destruction of Krypton, the House of El always seems to have something to do with it. Like Jor-El warned of the impending doom. That's always going to be part of the story. It's always going to be part of the canon. Now we're hearing possibly Zor-El, his brother, had something to do with it. Perhaps this device that he created to save planets that are dying, to reactivate their cores when used on a planet whose core is fully intact and functioning properly. If this device is used on a core of a planet that doesn't have any problems, perhaps it does create some kind of a cascade effect that destroys the planet. Could Rogelzar himself have caused that? Could Zor-El have caused that? Could Zor-El, in experimenting, somehow have caused the core of the planet Krypton to become unstable? Or perhaps Rogelzar merely stole the device from Zor-El and used it to destroy Krypton. So a lot of answers still to come in this story. If Zor-El is either directly or indirectly responsible for destroying the planet, what will that do to the sense of vengeance and justice that Supergirl herself feels that she owes the Kryptonians who died in the blast? That's going to be interesting to see, right? Like if her father, I mean, obviously her father's already dead. He can't be punished anymore. But will it change her outlook? Will she perhaps be even more focused on punishing Rogelzar? Could she perhaps head into the Phantom Zone and want to take matters and vengeance and justice into her own hands and betray her own code of not killing because she feels that Rogelzar has somehow tainted the memory of her father by using a device her father created to destroy Krypton? Again, there's a lot of questions here, a lot of things to wonder about and to be answered. The art and issue by Emmanuel Lupacchino is okay. I tend to think of Emmanuel's art as being a little more polished. It's not quite, doesn't look quite as finished as it does here. And the other thing I'll say about Emmanuel's art, she's a good storyteller. I like her panel layouts. But I prefer Emmanuela as a cover artist, actually. I think that's where her strength lies. In single images, I think she gets to spend more time on covers because it is just a single image, and it allows the art to look more polished and more finished. As I said, no problem with her storytelling, and she does do a great job at facial expressions and the artistic choices she makes, both page layout-wise, where the panels go on the page, and also the layouts within the panels themselves. But I find her art not to be as dynamic when she's doing interiors as opposed to when she's doing covers. And again, I'm sure it's just a timing issue. It takes so much longer to do the interiors as opposed to doing the just the covers. So the rest of the art is pretty solid. You know, we did have Lan Medina and Sean Parsons help fill in on a couple of the issues. And the only other thing I'll say about the art is that I miss Kevin Maguire. I love Kevin Maguire's art on the series. I've talked about it at length. I think it's some of the best work of his career, working with Sean Parsons as inker. He's just done the two of them have just done an incredibly wonderful job. But I will say that the few pages that Lan Medina and Sean Parsons did, it's the art style similar enough to what Emanuela did that it doesn't pull you out of the story. It's not immediately obvious that it's a different artist. So I'm very curious to get more answers about just what's going on. This was a very fast-paced issue. Everything happened so quickly, we almost didn't get to see some of the emotionality that Mark Andreyko has brought to the story as far as Supergirl wanting to find answers, sometimes questioning her choice to go on this mission, questioning whether she should have, the feelings that she has of a little bit of survivor's guilt, a little bit of wanting vengeance or justice or retribution for what Rogelzar has done. But as I mentioned earlier, there is a lot here that can be explored further. It's almost like this issue was, okay, here's a bunch of possible explanation, possible scenarios or threads that can come together to help explain how Rogelzar destroyed Krypton, if he really did, who else might have been involved. And it's so fast-paced with the fight with Splice that Kara really hasn't had a chance to process any of it yet. So I'm sure all of that is to come, and I can't wait to see how Andreyko explores all that. The other thing I'll say about the issue is I'm really starting to like Xander Cole. It's not completely obvious that he's on the side of Angels, that he's a good guy or a bad guy. He does seem to feel pretty strongly about Kara. He seems pretty worried about her, especially for having met her only recently. You know, she disappears, and it seems immediately clear to me that he's going to take the ship and take Krypto and track Supergirl, in his own words, to the end of the universe if necessary. She's not quite at the end of the universe. She's in the Vega system, which, according to the exposition here, is almost the end of the universe. But I do find it refreshing he's not just going to go off on his own. There is another story in this issue that stars Xander Cole, and it's interesting because it doesn't necessarily line up in a way with how he's acting in this issue, but there is so much about him that we just don't know. It makes it tough to kind of get a read on the consistency of his character. And when I get into the next story, you'll kind of know what I mean. But I, for one, am hoping that he is on the side of Angels. I like him as a character. I would like to see him hang around and possibly be a love interest for Supergirl. I mentioned before when we first saw Xander show up that it's a very classic relationship in the DCU, having Supergirl and a Colon together romantically, that Colon, namely being Brainiac 5 from the Legion of Superheroes. So if we find out that Xander Cole is an ancestor of Brainiac, wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But again, I just think it's a good combination. There's a bit of nostalgia there with her being involved in a Colon. So I guess it remains to be seen if he really will go and rescue her and what his motivations are. You know, when they met, he seemed to just want to get off that planet where the bar was, where they met, and thus, you know, was kind of, I don't want to say using Supergirl, but taking advantage, let's say. But I do like the fact that she does have a companion on this trip, this quest that she's on beyond Krypto. It's going to kind of give her a sounding board. And he does seem very empathetic to her and obviously cares about her if he's willing to travel to the ends of the universe. I mean, he could just easily could have said, well, she did it to herself. I told her to get back on the ship. She was teleported away. There's tracking in the suit. But is it really my responsibility to go and rescue her? You know, he could just set Crypto. All right, Crypto, here you go. Here's where she is. Go find her. But it seems like he's going to be willing to undertake that search himself. So let's go on and talk about the second story in this issue. It's Xander Cole and the Lost Colony. It's Mark Andraco and Brad Walker as storytellers. So Brad, who handled the art duties, clearly had a lot of input into the story. We've got inks by Drew Hennessy, colors by Chris Sotomayor, and letters by Tom Napolitano. And the story starts off, we're in the IDIG Prime cluster at the edge of the universe, and Xander Cole is attempting to retrieve a Chital flower. It's a legendary for its healing properties. It's long thought extinct, but those thoughts are wrong, and Xander Cole is thinking to himself, I, Dr. Xander Cole, will bring back proof if I can just reach. And he's reaching down, you know, he's rappelling down the side of a cliff. He's reaching for one of these flowers, and he's hanging off by what looks to be some kind of robotic arm that he has. So apparently he's lost one of his arms. I didn't notice this about him before, but his hand is robotic and it's got like an extension on it, and he's hanging off of a limb or a root of some sort with that hand as this cable extends out of his arm, and the root breaks and it snaps and he falls down and ends up in what looks to be some kind of a lost city. And he's thinking to himself, note to self, recalibrate robotic arm before dangling off a cliffside. But there's no record of there being any colony on this cluster, so he's actually made a pretty interesting discovery here. And as he's looking around, he sees that whatever happened here wasn't very pretty. The colony looks to be pretty much destroyed, but he does see something shiny. Perhaps it's a rare gem, but no, it's just some kind of weird tech. But it could be worth something if it even works anymore. And as he picks it up, it projects a distress signal, and a lot of it is garbled, but the person in the message is saying this is a distress signal. They need immediate assistance from anyone who can hear this message. And what Xander Cole immediately realizes is that the person in the message is speaking Kryptonian. And she goes on to say, I'm of the Kryptonian outpost on IDIG Prime. We're under attack. Garble, garble, garble are butchering us. Xander Cole thinks to himself that his mom saying minoring in dead languages was a waste of time. But clearly, he was able to use it. He's able to use it. And it is a little coincidental that he does know Kryptonian, perhaps fated to run into Kara, Supergirl. He should be able to help on her quest. Clearly, he has an interest in Krypton if he was interested enough to learn their language. So as he's watching the video or the projection, the hologram, whatever it is, the woman in that's giving the distress signal, giving the message, is basically run through from behind. And as Xander's watching it, he screams out, no. And then the artifact that in his hand is destroyed by an arrow. And he's like, okay, that's a real arrow. That's not a hologram. And he turns around and says, hello there. And there are some manner of beasts there. And I'm not sure if they're speaking Kryptonian as well. I don't think that they are, because Xander does not seem to understand them. But he does say, my name is Xander. I'm a scientist. I mean no harm. Holds up his hands to show he's of no threat. Says, friends. They immediately start firing at him. He says, I guess not. Makes a run for it. Ends up jumping off the side of a cliff. Lands in some water. And is thinking, what is that all about? Those beings obviously did not like me being there, but why? Why did they not want me there? Who was that Kryptonian woman? Who was attacking them? What was this massacre? And these beings that just chased him off, they were using old Kryptonian weapons. Did the remains of this colony help trigger tool use among the locals of this planet? I mean, it was supposed to be this cluster. It was supposed to be uninhabited, right? There was no record of sentient life there. There was no record of any colony being there. So what exactly is going on? And Xander thinks, well, this is a research project that is actually worthy of him. He could put his degrees to good use, but he prefers to keep breathing, and rather than stay and endanger himself, he's got to figure out how to get back to his ship. And as he heads toward shore from this lake or pond that he landed in, he sees what looks to be some kind of Kryptonian artifact. Thinks to himself, is that an altar? Maybe his luck isn't all bad today. And several hours later, he finally gets back to his ship, and he thinks to himself, well, he lost a rare flower, but he did find a dead Kryptonian colony, uncovered a new race. He's got this unknown artifact, Kryptonian artifact, that looked to be an altar. I mean, it looks like an obelisk of some sort, but very, very small, like it fits in his hand. So overall, he's going to call this a win. And maybe this win will even impress his mom. Probably not, he thinks to himself, but stranger things have happened, and he flies off. So again, not completely consistent with the Xander Cole we saw in the first story, in as much as this Xander Cole in this story seems very self-centered, very much out to make a name for himself. He wants the recognition. He wants the notoriety that comes with, you know, proving that a flower is not extinct. The fact that he's excited that he discovered this lost colony. He discovered this Kryptonian outpost that nobody knew about. He discovered a new race. But he's not so dedicated and so principled to archaeology or anthropology or whatever it is that you want to call it, that he's willing to in any way endanger himself or let somebody else know about it, right? Like, if you're dedicated to the ideals of discovery and knowledge, you're either going to be willing to take on some risk to learn the truth about the history of this colony and this cluster and this other race, or if you're worried about being hurt in that pursuit of knowledge, why would you not tell somebody else about it so you can come back more prepared and discover the knowledge and be willing to share the knowledge, right? He wants the notoriety for himself. So again, it's that self-centeredness, and he's not so dedicated to the knowledge and the discovery of knowledge that he's willing to share credit with anyone else. So why not? He'll keep it to himself for now, and who knows? Later on down the line, he may have the opportunity to come back on his own and discover things, or, you know, he's not willing to share. The knowledge is not what's important to him. It seems like the notoriety or the prestige with discovering these things is what's most important. So he's calling it a win because he did find an ancient artifact there, and it's got to in some way tie in with what happens to him later when he hooks up with Kara. Perhaps it's a clue that he does have an interest in Krypton. He knows the Kryptonian language, and perhaps the whole reason he's helping Kara out is because he wants to learn more about this artifact that he has. Or another possibility would be that he has learned a lesson. He's learned some humility. He's learned some self-sacrifice in the ensuing time between when this story takes place and when he hooked up with Supergirl. So he's a complex character. He's very interesting. He's very fun. I like the voice that Andrako gives him, both the way he scripts him and his overall kind of attitude. He's just fun. He brings a level of complexity, and he's a complicated character, as I said. And so there's a sense of getting to know him, which is always enjoyable when it's an interesting character. So I hope to see a lot more of him, and I'm sure that we will. And it'll be interesting to kind of learn of his origins. And as I mentioned in the first story, it does seem like he's willing to go to the ends of the universe to find Kara, and that does seem very much not in keeping with his character, his personality, or his character in this story, because it does seem somewhat selfless. But you could also flip it around and say, well, if he wants to use Kara to find out about this artifact or to find out more about Krypton, and that is what he feels is his pathway to becoming famous, or some kind of having some kind of prestige attached to his name for being an expert on Krypton, or being able to reveal this lost colony, whatever it is that's going to bring him celebrity status. Perhaps he sees Supergirl Kara as his pathway to that. And so that's why he's willing to go to the ends of the universe to rescue her. So perhaps what he's doing in the first story isn't quite as altruistic as it seems on the surface, but it's all to be determined. And again, it gives you something to think about, something that I always enjoy in comics that make you think and give us answers, but also raise more questions. The other thing that I will say about this story, this second story in the issue, is the art by Brad Walker. Man, do I love myself some Brad Walker art. As much as I loved his work on The Demon recently, where he got to draw hellscapes on Earth, I think I enjoy the art, Brad's art, most when he's drawing things that are cosmic. You know, I first discovered his art, and I know he'd done a lot of work before this, but I first discovered his art and really fell in love with it on the New Guardians series from the New 52, where Brad was drawing a lot of different alien races and different lanterns. Kyle Rayner was a big part of that series, as well as Carol Ferris, the Star Sapphire. And I loved seeing Brad draw these alien landscapes and alien technology and different alien creatures. And he gets a chance to do that here, both by drawing Xander Cole, who, you know, it's pretty much humanoid in appearance, except for the green skin, but also the Kryptonian technology, the aliens that fire upon Xander Cole look really cool, and just this alien-looking jungle. And the other thing that I'll mention specifically is I think – and I'm glad that Mark Andreyko, or whoever it was, editor or whoever at DC, decided to give Brad a storytelling credit on this particular story, because I will say that I've never seen Brad's storytelling as strong as it is in this issue. As far as visual storytelling from panel to panel, there are a lot of great images here. Specifically, I think my favorite page is Xander Cole jumping off the cliff, trying to get away from these beings with their energy weapons, and landing in the water. It just looks really, really cool. It's a really cool sequence. And again, I mean, you can't go wrong with Brad Walker art, but this is above and beyond. It's even though it's just a short story, it's some of my favorite Brad Walker work I've ever seen. I'm gonna have to hit up Brad and see if any of these pages are available for sale. Man, I'd love to have that page of Xander jumping off the cliff. It's really, really, really cool looking. So, yeah, great job by Brad. And the colors, I'll also mention, are done very, very well by Chris Sotomayor. You know, it's an alien world, so wouldn't necessarily expect things to look like they do on Earth. And that certainly seems to be the case with the coloring. It's got a bit of a pastel look to it, especially the sky and the planets and all that stuff. So great job there. And I should also mention the work by Drew Hennessy, who partners up a lot of times with Brad to do particular projects. And they really are a dream team. I think Drew really brings a sense of keeping Brad's lines really clean, keeping Brad's art. I mean, Brad's pencils are pretty clean on their own, but Drew really gives it a polished look with his ink. So I think they are one of those classic team ups, like John Byrne and Terry Austin, or Alan Davis and Mark Farmer, where I don't really want to see anybody else ink Brad. I've seen other people ink Brad, and you know, I'm still a fan of the art, but for me, Brad Walker art is best when inked by Drew Hennessy, and I think Brad would probably agree with that as well. So the second story is my favorite of the three in this issue. It was just a lot of fun getting some insight into Xander Cole and kind of his character, and with the Brad Walker art, it was kind of a no-brainer. I knew Brad was doing a story in this issue, but I just didn't have any idea it was going to be as good as it was, because, again, some of the best storytelling and transitions from panel to panel that I've seen Brad do. Great choices in zooming in and out, panel layouts, like everything. It's just it's done really, really, really well. So Let me talk a little bit about the final story in this issue. I did mention it's somewhat of a holiday theme story. It's called The Plurot. The story is by Dan Jurgens. We have pencils by Tom Derenick, inks by Sean Parsons, colors by FCO Placencia, and letters by Tom Napolitano. And the only thing I'll say about this issue, it is in keeping with the holiday theme. And it does have that kind of cheesy holiday feel. And it's just a little bit too cliche for me. And it also doesn't completely jibe with Supergirl's character in what we've seen in this series so far. And by that, I mean what Steve Orlando really wanted to focus on when he started the Supergirl Rebirth title, and we talked about this when we had him on the show, was how the number one aspect of Supergirl's character, kind of her main power, if you will, was her empathy, her ability to put herself in other people's shoes. She didn't just want to stop a supervillain from doing whatever bad thing they were doing. She wanted to understand why and try to help them so that they wouldn't maybe not have to live that sort of life. And in this story, that's not necessarily the case. She kind of throws a little bit of a temper tantrum here, and then we see some growth from her in a way, but it only gets her back to where she already should have been in the first place. So maybe it's just the fact that she's having a bad day, because as the story starts off, we see her Earth parents are decorating for Christmas. Her mother's coming home from making a huge donation at the orphanage. Supergirl herself was out fighting some kind of a giant alien garbage menace, helping out ICE, and apparently in a need to end this battle quickly, Supergirl basically flies through this robot, and it's filled with some kind of weird alien substance. And so when Supergirl gets home, she's covered with this green brown glunk and sludge. So she immediately heads up to take a shower, and as goes to get dressed, she goes into her closet, screams out no, because she realizes that there are boxes of her things that are missing. And her Earth mother says, well, yeah, I gathered up some of the things you've outgrown and I've donated them to charity. And Kara says, well, even my suede boots, yeah, you said they didn't fit anymore, you know, kids need our support, especially this time of year. And Kara says, yeah, but the box they were in had a Plurot. And what a Plurot is it's basically a Kryptonian stuffed animal. It's very common for kids on Krypton. It's safety and security wrapped up in a fluffy, furry ball that even purrs. And the reason that it's so important to Kara is because her mother gave it to her as she was leaving Krypton in the rocket that saved her from being destroyed along with the rest of the inhabitants of Argo City and Krypton itself. So even though her father always has said, don't use your powers for your own gain, he thinks it's okay in this instance because it was an accident and it's basically her mother and his own fault, not any fault of Kara's. So if you fly over to the orphanage, sneak in, use your X-ray vision to find the Plurot and take it and leave, he really doesn't see the harm in that. So that's exactly what Supergirl does. And when she does, she's spotted by a bunch of kids from the orphanage who are very happy to see her. No, at this time, this version of the DCU, if everybody realizes that in a way, Kara is an orphan as well. I think maybe that is the case. So it makes sense that these kids would really identify with her. And of course, they look up to her because she's Supergirl and she's a hero. And what Kara learns in the course of talking to these kids is that her Plurot has already been given to a little girl named Rosa. Rosa named her Smuffy. And it's a great image from Tom Derenick, the look on Supergirl's face when she realizes that her beloved stuffed animal has already been given away. And she's thinking, how could I possibly take it from this girl? She learns from the director of the orphanage that Rosa's had it particularly tough. She's lost her family this Christmas, and she's up north where the holidays are filled with snow. And they gave her the present of the Plurot early to make things a little easier on her. And Kara thinks, well, there might be a way to make it even better, and I know just the person who can help. And Kara calls ICE, immediately having the favor repaid for Kara helping out against the earlier alien menace. So ICE shows up and allows the orphanage kids to have snow and have a white Christmas, basically. And apparently Kara has told Ice also about the Pleurot, and she mentions, I'm not sure if Rosa's going to want to give it back. She seems like she's very attached to it. And Kara says, that's absolutely fine. It's hers now. I want her to have it. And Ice's response is, well, it's proof that heroism can be accomplished even with the smallest of gestures. Happy holidays, Supergirl. And Kara responds, happy holidays to us all. So again, a little bit of growth here. Kara learns that it's more important to give than to retain something or to receive yourself. It's time to pass on the security and the happiness that the Pleurot is able to give to people. But again, it's a little trite. It's a little saccharine. But it's an enjoyable story for what it is. But the one thing about it that does just make me wonder a little bit about if Dan Jurgens had been following along with what Steve Orlando and subsequent writers had been doing. Supergirl kind of throwing that, getting all out of sorts about it, doesn't seem completely in character with her. But again, I'll chalk it up to her having a bad day, being covered in the sludge from the Megazon alien that her and Ice were fighting. So all in all, an enjoyable issue. I would even say an above average issue. And I really give credit to that story starring Xander Cole from Andraco and Walker, that really puts this issue over the top. One of my favorite issues of the Supergirl story, Supergirl title, since Andraco's taken over. The only thing that would have made it better for me would have been some of that incredible Kevin Maguire art on the first story, because again, I love what Maguire's been doing on the title. To take nothing away from Emmanuel Lupacchino, I've just really been loving what Maguire's been doing on the title. So all in all, an enjoyable issue. And I think that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to retweet the tweet that announces this episode and DM us the code word, which is going to be Xander Cole, based on the awesomeness of that second story. So Xander is Z'NDR space KOL. So direct message us that on Twitter for a chance to win the Superman Our Worlds at War Volume 1 trade paperback. So that's going to do it, everybody. Thanks for joining me as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.